and welcome back to another episode of Real Conversations About Aging Parents. I have a special guest with us today, Erin Orenjek. Hi, Erin. How are you?
Hi, Rebecca. How are you? I'm great. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. So we connected last October at that design conference I went to up in North Carolina. And I know that we had kind of chatted since then, and you do a lot of the same approaches that we were talking about in the panel with neuroaesthetics and just design for health and wellness. We'll get into all of that and all the beautiful things you do, because I saw on your website you're also an artist, which really must make it more interesting than most for the interior design, right?
It's a bonus. It is a bonus.
Yeah. You're like, I can't find this piece, but I can make it.
That's how it's started.
Anyway, okay, so we'll get into that, but I think we have a lot to connect on with sort of how you have found yourself to know that design is important. Before we get into that, can you just tell our audience a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what your current business is like?
My name is Erin Orenjek. I founded Alon Design Interiors and Fine Art in 2016, but I always knew there was such a great power in the way a space looked and made you feel. It was something that it was a hobby for me until it developed into lots of people asking me, can you help me with my space? I noticed there was a difference in how my kids felt in their environment, in their rooms, the way my friends felt when they came into my house. And we are really in tune with customizing our clients' spaces specifically to them, what they need to do, how they need to feel, how they need to think. Their day-to-day is very important to us. And we're a luxury interior design firm just because we take it to such detail.
Well, that's awesome. And I've talked about interior design quite a bit on the podcast, but I do, before I really got into understanding what that profession was like, now that I've been around it so much, it's literally like a human service. It's just, you know, I call it another iteration of healthcare or wellness care, but it really is deep down. I mean, it's a human to human. I'm creating an environment in which you will live, and your quality of life is part of this, and how much time you spend in this room and with whom and what you're doing, how much the environment, you know, impacts that. So anyway, okay. Well, I appreciate that introduction. So let's get straight to the point as far as what inspired you or some stories that you have in your lifetime that drew you to how you would serve other people through design.
I'll tell you a good story and a bad story. So the good story first is when I was in college, I started to work for a group of ladies. They are powerhouses in Washington. And I had the great fortune to work with them in their homes on these spectacular projects, mostly fundraising, for the National Symphony Orchestra, the Choral Arts Society. They had fundraising. There was political fundraising going on, and the events that they would produce were massive, massive and fun. And they would raise so much money to benefit these organizations or whatever the case may be. And these women moved mountains. And their homes, which they produced everything out of their homes for the most part, were very conducive for action. It was a beautiful environment. They had their day-to-day activities completely on a beautiful rhythm. It was systematic the way they floated around their room and what they did and how easily it was to call whoever, wherever, however in the world. The way they functioned was at a level, and their home supported all of it just with ease of motion. The way things felt, the way things looked, the color, the lighting, the texture, all of the things, how their meals, very simple, but easy to do. And you sat down to a beautiful, gorgeous lunch every day. Not that hard in the way their kitchen was set up. Everything seemed very easy. So that was a really clear picture. This leads to that for me. It was very obvious. And so that was the good story. That was the good story. I grew up in a middle-class family in Philadelphia. I lived a lot with my grandparents. I was very, very close with them. My mom is a single mom, and she was working a lot. And, you know, so I would, obviously I lived with my mom, but I spent a lot of time with my grandparents. And after a while, my grandfather developed dementia. And in the beginning, it was, oh, dad, you know, you're just, oh, you're confused. It did get worse. I feel like in retrospect, now knowing what I know about neuroaesthetics, the light in their house was not great. My grandmother would keep the curtains closed a lot. So the natural light, because the curtains were behind other pieces of furniture, so it was difficult for her to get to. She was also elderly and, you know, had a tough time reaching behind to open the large window of curtains. So they primarily stayed closed. So the natural light in the home was low. And I would say that the decor was a little on the darker side. She had these beautiful, rich maroon carpets that were nice, but it was dark. It was dark. And I almost feel that dark, heavy came on to weighed almost. The dark, heavy weighed on his mind and didn't really help with the dementia at all. And ultimately, he fell down the steps because he wasn't able to differentiate the steps in the middle of the night. And, you know, the lighting, the darkness, it wasn't good for him in the end.
I'm sorry, that's a very challenging, I'm sure, challenging experience, but then also to know how the environment may have played a role in prematurely ending his life. Because you had told me he eventually passed away from those injuries from the stairs, right?
That was it. He fell down the steps. He fell down the steps and had a brain bleed.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, and so then you sort of carry both of those through then with your design, I'm sure. Like, so you have the really beautiful experience with what sounds like high society and perfect environments into an environment that actually became detrimental to somebody that you cared about. So you get to kind of have the yin and the yang, it sounds like, when you go through design. Is that right?
It really is. And it always factors in. So many, that yin and yang really comes into play with every single space I'm in. Where are you? How is this affecting you? How do you feel? How do you think? How do you move? And, you know, to what do you want? What do you want to think? Where do you want to move? How do you want to feel? And we all, so many variables come into play. It's a giant puzzle piece, and it's a really personal puzzle piece that comes in, and we need to craft exactly what is happening to the best way possible for our clients. And not every space that we may think is beautiful, somebody else would think, oh my God, this is so ugly, get me out of here. So there's that element as well, the preferences and that default mode network that Anjan Chatterjee talked about. I don't know if you talked about it. Anjan Chatterjee, but
no, not specifically, no.
So Anjan talked about this default mode network, and what do we know to be good and what do we know to be bad, and how, you know, culture and our upbringing has kind of laid these pathways in our brain to say, this is a good thing or this is a bad thing. Color, texture, pattern, those kind of things come into play where, one, it might be heaven for somebody, and for the other person, it's, oh, get me, oh, I don't like it here. So that comes into play as well.
So tell me how you balance that as an interior designer. So especially if you have a client who might have a mobility or a sensory challenge or something like that, what's evolved or matured in your approach since the day you started the company? What do you do differently now with that knowledge?
The certification in neuroaesthetics really opened my mind in terms of what is physiologically happening. Before, I had instinct. It was always an instinct for me of, we need to address this area. We need to talk about this mobility, what you see, what you think, all of these things. But neuroaesthetics opened up my understanding of patterns and how we as humans have this primitive way of understanding things. And that's a lot of our driver. And we have just that general understanding based on sensory cues, you call it sensory data, that we don't even realize what's happening. You know, 95% of it is subconscious. And then we have that thought. So that is after all these other things have happened. So what I try to do is set more of the stage so that those instincts, that subconscious, that feeling, now I can describe it. People say, I like that room, or I don't like that room, or I don't know what's going on. I've worked on it for so long. I can tell them what's going on in a factual way, not just in an instinctual way. This is what I strongly believe. Now I have a little more of the science and facts that come behind it that I can say, oh, the pattern or the color or the light, or it's dark over there, or that seat is too low for you, or something like that.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, because I know a lot of people listening are not necessarily interior designers. And the way that I like to speak about the environment is that it does kind of two things. It says it sends signals through our eyes because we see the environment, and the signals say safe or not safe, and then do this but not that. And so you go through and you're coding, even when you're driving, everything is coding. You know, the environment is basically being interpreted by the brain. And it's one of the most energy consuming things the brain does all day. So if you go into a really crowded, chaotic environment, say you go to, like, I don't know, a school fiesta, I guess, because I just went to one, or I don't know, a band concert, something where there's a lot of visual and auditory stimuli at the same time, and you feel kind of tired afterwards, or you feel like maybe you did 2 days in one. And that's just because it takes a lot of processing for the brain to decode the environment. And when you think about things like meditation practices, a lot of that has to do with removing the environment, getting into a quiet, calm, kind of boring looking space, if you will, and actually closing your eyes. So you're actually shutting out the coding from the environment at that time, so you can actually rest your brain, because that's how much the brain gets engaged. And as we age, or as we have neurological phenomena that happen, then the coding in the environment becomes amplified as we get older, as how important it is for things like lighting or signaling or task-oriented areas. And so if I'm somebody who is having trouble remembering to take my keys and my phone and my wallet, then having a space that's next to where I might need those on my way out is a good signal to my brain. Again, I'm just like pre-coding it to say, hey, look, remember, you've got to take all this once you leave this area. And I think what I love so much about interior design is they are the people that get to code that I mean, this is not a, you know, I don't mean to make this into a computer, but like they're writing lines of code every time that a designer picks a pattern or a lighting source or a color. It's like they're basically layering in and building this code for the person to live there and have the environment help shape kind of how they live, right? So I know you've done it for a long time. Do you have any like tips or lessons learned having done this for a while that might be applicable, maybe not on the luxury price level, but just in people's day-to-day homes? Like, do you have some heuristics that you go by?
For sure. Day-to-day is the core of the topic. So that is where you can start. Literally take inventory. This is what I do in the room. And I genuinely tell my clients, walk me through. Walk me through. You wake up, you open your eyes. What do you see? What do you think about? Where do you have your coffee? Do you wish you had a seat for your coffee? Can you put it down easily? Or do you have to bend over and put it down on the coffee table that's all the way over there? Each little teeny tiny action can make a huge difference if you change three of them at one time. I want to be able to put my coffee pot right here and my phone goes here and I have to find my glasses. I'm constantly looking for my glasses. I hate it. I hate it. I have five spaces in the house that I can find my glasses. And it takes out the, what is it, running around in circles, that chaos. It releases it. It erases that from the day. So everything is in a smooth working order. So you mentioned the keys and the glasses at the front door. We contributed to a magazine article in Real Homes talking about your entryway table. And that tray is a great tool that people can have at their front door. I like marble. I like real stone, real earth materials. Wood is great. Marble, wood, silver, if you have that, whatever you have there, but make it something substantial that is your cue. This goes here. I don't have to think about that anymore. This I can find there. My glasses are probably on this tray or that tray. I have trays all over my house. It's a huge tool for me. It's like somebody's serving you. I know where this is at all times. So I have other things to think about. I don't need to think about where are my glasses anymore.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, we talk a lot on the podcast about things we can't control. So especially you're trying to help somebody like an aging parent or grandparent. And, you know, people say, well, you know, they won't go to the doctor. Well, you might not be able to control that. Oh, they don't take their medications or they're stubborn or, you know, they won't stop doing this, that whatever activity they find to be risky. But when we talk about the things that we can control, I do think in the right situations, somebody coming and saying, can I come over for an afternoon and just help kind of rearrange some things? And you don't have to, you know, have the, you know, full on HGTV experience. It could be as simple as, can I look at this with you? Can I go through this part of the day with you and see if I can help, you know, like you said, set up this tray, which you could do for like maybe $20 if you go to the right store and like actually like make some functional improvements during the day just through looking at the environment or being interested in it. A lot of people, once they live in that environment, even if it's not ideal, just get so adapted to it. Mm-hmm. Right. Or maybe they don't have what we call the sequencing to go through and say, I'm going to actually imagine it, how different it could be, and then take steps A to Z to go get there. And so of the things that we can control, really environment is one of those where we can make an impact just through interest, just through being curious and assisting somebody else and helping set up that environment a little bit differently.
Set a timer. This is what else I like to this is what else I like to say. Set a timer, 20 minutes, and block out that 20 minutes. If the whole day is overwhelming to you, or if looking at a new space is overwhelming, or people can't process that, I totally understand. Set a timer for 20 minutes and get your notebook out and write down your thought. Just write down your thought. 5 things. I wish I had a table. I can't see my book. I can't see something. Or my coffee pot, the filling up the coffee pot water is all the way on the other side. Just write down whatever. Whatever. I can't open my window easily. You know, things like that make such a difference to just be able to identify, oh, if I had a table to put my coffee down, if I didn't have to look for my glasses the first thing in the morning, if I didn't have to do X, my morning would be a whole lot different. And therefore the day might be a little bit different. And, you know, and that starts really to snowball in how people experience their environment and experience the everyday tasks. It can be fun, you know, cooking, laundry, whatever. It can be fun if you pay attention to how can I make this fun? How can this be easier? How am I going to feel served?
Well, I love that. I always talk about, you know, design needing to perform for the people that are in it, right? And that we need to be harder on home design as far as making sure that it's staying relevant for us, you know, as we change or get older. And one thing you mentioned about the coffee. So I like to, that's actually a perfect example of design translating into behaviors or what we call task preservation. So if there's a task that's very meaningful to somebody, say that's reading the morning paper with their coffee, and that brings them a lot of joy, it helps them feel connected, and it gives them something to talk about when they go to meet so-and-so for lunch later that day. Oh, do you know what I read in the paper? And yeah. You go back to design, and if it's, yeah, right? Or Sudoku, and I don't even do Sudoku, but that's like the thing, right? And so, but you can see that, right. So this is a stack, meaning you have to stack 5 or 6 things before you're reading the paper with your coffee. And when you're really agile and young and motivated to read that paper, which I don't think people under 50 read newspapers, but when you have that ability to just adapt and restack, then you're reading the paper all the time. But there is a point at which the stack needs to be a little bit more like easy, like meaning that if I can't find my glasses and I can't get the coffee going, like my ability to pull all of that together to go ahead and read the paper and then go throughout the behaviors the rest of the day that I described, that's how you're seeing that the design and the actual tasks or behaviors are very related in that way. And then you just end up not doing that. And you think, well, why did so-and-so stop reading? You know, why did so-and-so, you know, go to lunch, but it didn't last as long? I mean, I don't know, right? But we can't keep thinking of these things as completely separate. So environments either promote or discourage behaviors or tasks. And that really becomes, I mean, for everybody, it's important, but specifically when you're trying to use the environment to promote a quality of life or to promote function overall, there's all the low hanging fruit just in the environment itself. And part of it's just being curious as to like, what's the task we want to preserve and why? Like you said, you know, journal it. What are the things important to you? Well, morning coffee with the paper, and then build backwards from there and understand what all the barriers might be.
Yes, 100%. Everything you say. I mean, I think people just need a little bit of a nudge to pay attention. And that's all it takes. Just a little, just that second thought of what's happening right here. What do I need? What do I need? And sometimes it's a new chair. Sometimes it's a table lamp. Sometimes it's a little, sometimes it's more involved. And then you have to really work with somebody, people. But when it comes to your health, when it comes to productivity, when it comes to motivation. Kids for me are very important. They need spaces that support them. They need to learn. They need to be in a good mood. They need to feel connected with the family. So all the tasks.
They need to sleep.
They need to sleep. Yeah. So these kids, their environments are really just as important as our environments because everybody lives here. So if you have somebody who's in a bad mood, drains the house instantaneously. That's any age, every age. So for us, we really pay attention to mood and how people feel. Do they feel productive? Do they feel like they have purpose? Any age, every age. What do I have to do that's important today? And your environment literally needs to serve you. We like when our environment serves us. We don't want to constantly tend to our environment. And that's maybe another tip that I would offer. Get to finished. Get to finished in a room. It is a weight to constantly, oh, I need to get that. Oh, I want to get that. Oh, we want to change this. Get to finished. And then you will be able to understand how you can live. You, not the house, you. And that shifts the focus. So the house is built to serve.
That's awesome. We mentioned this when we were chatting right before the podcast about lighting. You had some tip that you'd like to employ when you look at lighting and safety. What's kind of your general approach to lighting?
Lighting needs to take you on a ride throughout the space. It needs to, light equals energy. So when you want to be up, you need to have bright, cooler light. So there's warm light and cool light. There's Kelvins. So that's the color of the light. Everybody, you know, needs to get the right light bulbs. That makes a huge difference in a room, the right light bulbs. And so there's warmer light, which is muted, relaxed, and there's cooler light. That is blue light. So the warmer light is yellow light and the cooler light is blue light. Blue light is the color of the sun. The sun is actually a blue light and it's bright, really bright. That is the wake up. It's time to do something right now. The cooler light is let's chill out. It's time for rest. We're relaxing. It's been a wonderful day. That light, just to have that understanding in terms of where to put what kind of light. You also want to think about illuminating the whole of the room and having the ability to manipulate that, having the ability to control that. If you want to sit, if you need a reading light, say, for example, on your bedstand, you like to read at night, and you need to see your book. Hey, that within reach kind of lamp makes all the difference in the world versus just having a center fixture in the middle of the space. And now you have to get up and go over and turn it off. Those kind of things make a huge difference when you think about what you're doing and you have the light that you need to see and to feel. So it's like a trigger in your brain of, it's time to do something right now, or you need to see this right now. The side of the room is dark. It's also a way to balance the space that everything has a light function. When you have layers of light, it's the best. One big light in the middle of the room is really great. To have the table lamps as well, have sconces as well. Have task lighting underneath your cabinet. You have underneath the cabinet in the kitchen. That cavern underneath the cabinets. That when that's illuminated, it makes all the difference in the world in the cabinet, in the kitchen, because these things, you're doing something right there to have the light on, which means I'm doing something, I'm paying attention to this, is that support system. So put the light on, put the light on, we're supporting you. And then, you know, also if you have people that can't really see that great and you're walking around at night, always have a night light plugged into the hallway for restroom visits in the middle of the night. So you're not bumping into something. I mean, this is, again, any age, elderly and kids and everywhere in between, that it is a pleasant, easy motion of this is what we have to do. And we, the light is carrying us. So lighting is a huge pool.
Well, I haven't heard that verb. I'm going to steal that now. The lighting is carrying you, because that's really, it does lead you throughout a space, right? And you're kind of grabbing the walls literally if you can't see. And something I like at night is to also think about low friction lighting, like meaning, and I mean that to say, I don't have to do anything. Because if I'm already tired and a little bit half asleep and you're going to have me find a switch in the middle of the night, and I know in my bathroom we have three different switches and I don't know if I'm going to hit the right one. And so light that automatically illuminates either motion sensor or automatic. I know like in my room, my husband can't stand any night lights. It just bothers his sleep. But the automatic lighting, once you actually go somewhere, can be really helpful. And as far as like access to this type of lighting, you can nowadays go on Amazon and get basically switch based LED strip lights for like less than $10. I mean, they're crazy inexpensive now to install in these cavernous areas. This is not something you need a high end lighting consultant all the time to do. It's just the idea that, man, I could, and they have basically adhesive on the back, right? And you plug them in and they're switch based, and they make a huge difference, especially you, if you're in an area where you have a lot of cabinetry, all of your tasks are between the surface you're working on and the cabinet and above. Those can be really challenging areas, and it can make you not want to use the area if you can't see very well. You know, like right. You said, at any age, right. It's just the idea of like, I don't like being there because my eyes have to work extra hard. And I don't think we realize neurologically, the brain is very lazy. The brain wants to do the most amount of work with the least amount of energy. And so things that require us to maybe adjust our vision continuously because the lighting is too low, your brain isn't going to say, hey, I don't like to be here because it's hard to see the contrast. You just don't do it anymore. And you don't really know why.
That's right.
And that happens to a lot of people that read a lot and they are not reading as much. And a lot of it goes back to the environment in which they're reading. And, you know, have they adapted to, or is that an environment making it promoting that behavior of reading? And so just be, again, that's kind of being curious. Like, why do I not do this anymore? And part of the, you know, the list of the whys, always environment should be in the top three.
It
absolutely
is.
Like, to me, that's always in the and then for health too, like why do I you know have this habit, or why do I do it? We'll go back to the environment. You know, what is the environment telling you to do? Oh, well, I have this, you know, shelf in my office and it's full of like sodas and chips and everything. Well, that's an environmental cue. And what did I just say about the brain? The brain is lazy. And so what is it going to do at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when it know it needs some energy? It's not going to master plan a salad, right? And so the environment is part of our behaviors. And because it's part of our behaviors, it then becomes part of our own health and well-being.
100%. 100%. And we see this, I've seen this with people that like to cook and don't like to cook. Nutrition, we're pretty serious about nutrition. It matters. I feel like what you consume is just sets you in the right direction or the wrong direction. And cooking and nutrition have a lot, it's effort. That's a lot to do. And not only is the actual cooking itself, but it is the shopping and the preparation and going to the store. And, you know, you take it from beginning, like, oh my God, I need to get dressed to go to the store. All of those things. My mom doesn't really eat well, and I wish she would eat a little better. but that whole act of meal is always prefaced with, it's just me. What do I need to make a big meal for? And she put so much extra thought into the act of making herself a beautiful meal. And if she were to twist her idea about it in terms of sitting down to a beautiful table, that she could easily access the plate and the napkin, everything was within reach. Nothing was up in the cabinet, down behind. Okay. That part, that's just setting up the system, and kind of getting that mealtime into a system, into like a nice rhythm. So the lighting in there, cleaning up, what's on the countertop. If you start seeing things, just like you said, the like tchotchkes on the counter, it stops you in your tracks. There's already so much stuff going on there. I'm not going to add to
it. Right.
So we're not going to get into all that today.
Yeah.
It's amazing what light and space do for your brain.
I think this is so fascinating. I know we could probably talk about this for hours, and maybe we will in another podcast revisit this, but I think this has been really helpful. So we've gone to talk about the importance of space. We've talked about lighting. We've talked about tasks. We've talked about behaviors. We talked about your approach and how important you feel like the environment is to setting the stage to get people where they need to be. So that is awesome. Well, if I have anybody that would like to get in contact with you, I'll put all of your information in the show notes, but what's the best way for them to get a hold of you if they'd like to work with you or ask you some questions?
My website is elan.design, elan.design. That's the company name, Elan Design. And you can definitely reach out to us, fill out the contact us. We're on Instagram at elan_design_interiors_fine art. So we are
nice.
we're interiors and fine art. And always just look me up by my name, Erin Oranjak. Google gets you to the right place. And we're on LinkedIn too. If anybody is on LinkedIn, Erin Oranjak, reach out. Awesome. We'll help you.
Well, Erin, this has been really fun. And I like your background too. So this has been fun for me to interview you, because anytime I talk to an interior designer, they have these fantastic backgrounds. So anyway, I appreciate you being here. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you'll come back and talk to me again on a future episode.
Rebecca, I'm a huge fan. You are
amazing. Oh, awesome.
You're amazing. You really do so much for me in terms of my practice, that this really is, from the medical perspective, this validation and understanding and support that I get from you means so much, that you understand us. We speak the same language. We're all helping people live better and feel better. And just to have us together is an amazing dream team. So I'm so grateful for you.
Oh, well, thank you. That's so sweet. I appreciate you saying that. Most of the people listening don't know that I have a whole other life that I like to do design. Talk about design all the time. So I try to spare them a little bit in this podcast, but it'll sneak in. It'll keep sneaking in every once in a while. So anyway, sure. Erin, nice to hear from you. And I hope to hear from you again soon.
For sure. You too. Anytime.
Hey everyone, it's Rebecca. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'd like to take just a moment to review the disclaimer. This podcast is for informational and occasional entertainment purposes only. Nothing discussed here is formal medical, legal, or financial advice. By listening to the podcast, we are not creating a patient-doctor relationship between you and myself or any of the guests. Really, it's just me and a possible guest or two, sometimes three, sitting around talking about difficult topics related to aging parents. If you have or suspect that you might have a medical problem or condition, you should seek advice from a licensed medical professional. If you have any questions or concerns, please read the full disclaimer in the show notes or contact me directly. Thank you again for joining us today. I can't wait to see you next week. Have a good day.